This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Why retrying Alec Murdaugh isn't optional. It is the only path to justice. You're going to hear a lot of people ask the question. Some of them already are, all over social media, in comment sections of their podcasts. Alec Murdaugh, 57 years old. He's serving 40 years in federal prison for stealing approximately $12 million from his clients. He's got a concurrent 27-year state sentence for financial crimes. He's going to likely die behind bars if all that holds. That's the mathematical reality of his situation, regardless of what happens in the courtroom from this point forward. Maybe. So why spend millions of taxpayer dollars on a retrial? Why put families through another trial? Why drag the state of South Carolina through another six-week media circus for a man who is never walking out of prison? Why even do any of this? It's a fair question. On the surface, if you don't understand a lot about the case, and I understand why people ask it, but the answer is simple and it's not complicated and it doesn't require a law degree to understand. Maggie Murdaugh was 52 years old. Paul Murdaugh was 22. They were shot to death at close range on their family's property on a June evening. And as of the moment the Supreme Court issued its ruling, nobody has been convicted of killing them because Alec is not convicted of killing them anymore. So who did it? Do we just say, well, we're not going to try Alec again. We think he did it, but maybe he didn't. We don't really know. Let's leave it unsolved. No. The guilty verdicts have been erased. The life sentences have been vacated. The legal record says the question of who murdered Maggie and Paul Murdaugh is opened, unanswered. Not because there wasn't enough evidence to bring charges, not because investigators couldn't identify a suspect, because an elected court clerk decided her book deal mattered more than the actual integrity of the trial. That's the reality, and the only way to fix it is to go back into a courtroom and do it right. The he's already in prison argument falls apart the moment you think about it for, you know, really more than a few seconds. Alec Murdaugh is serving time for being a thief. He stole from his clients. He stole from his law firm. He stole from people who came to him at the worst moments of their lives. Families dealing with wrongful deaths, people dealing with disabilities, people who trusted him because his name was on the building. That is real. That matters. He's being punished for it. But being a thief and being a murderer are different things. Those are different words. They describe different crimes. They carry different moral weight. And they carry very different weight for the people who loved Maggie and Paul. A financial crimes sentence is not a murder conviction by proxy. It was never designed to be one, and treating it like one, saying, well, he's locked up anyway, so what's the difference, tells the families of Maggie and Paul Murdaugh that the specific question of who killed their loved ones doesn't matter enough to answer. It tells them that the manner of Maggie and Paul's deaths is secondary to the convenience of the state. It tells them that justice has a price tag, and once you spent enough money, you can call it close enough and walk away. That's not acceptable. It shouldn't be acceptable to anyone. The state charged Alec Murdaugh with two counts of murder. The Supreme Court didn't say those charges were baseless. It didn't say the evidence was insufficient. It didn't say the state couldn't prove its case. It said the trial was unfair. The process was broken. And that means the state's obligation to pursue those charges hasn't been extinguished. It's been reset. The clock goes back to zero. And the state has to do it again, properly this time. You can't charge a man with double murder, present 6 weeks of testimony, obtain a conviction, have that conviction overturned because an officer of the court committed crimes during the proceedings, and then shrug and say, well, he's in prison for other stuff. That's not how the justice system works. It's not how it's supposed to work. And if it ever became how it works, if prosecutors started treating financial sentences as adequate substitutes for murder accountability, the consequences go far beyond this case. Think about what it means for Maggie and Paul if the state were to just walk away. The official legal record would say nobody was convicted of killing them. The murder case is still open, unresolved, not because there's a dead end, not because the trial went cold, but because the state decided that financial crime sentence was good enough. Close enough. And the question of who killed two people at close range with two different weapons on a summer evening in the Lowcountry didn't need its own definitive answer. That's an abandonment of the two people at the center of the case. The two people who cannot speak for themselves, who cannot advocate for their own justice, who are entirely dependent on the system to see through this. Jordan Jinks understood this. Jinks was Murdaugh's former client and childhood friend, one of the people Murdaugh stole from, one of the people who trusted him and got betrayed. During sentencing on the financial charges, Jinks stood in a courtroom and looked at Murdaugh in the face and asked him, "What kind of animal are you?" The people Murdaugh harmed financially showed up. They participated in the process. They confronted the man who stole from them. They believe in the system enough to go through it. The people who love Maggie and Paul, the people who are still carrying the weight of those deaths, deserve the same system to finish what it started. They deserve a verdict that addresses the murders specifically, not a sentence for something else that happens to keep the defendant locked up. The precedent question matters beyond this case, beyond this defendant, beyond South Carolina. If the state declines to retry a murder case because the defendant is already in prison on other charges, what kind of message does that send? It says the state's pursuit of justice has a ceiling. It says there's a point where the cost gets just too high, and the state says, throws in the towel, walks away. It says that if you're already in prison for something, the system might not bother holding you accountable for everything. Retrials are expensive. Nobody disputes that. There's also the grueling aspect of it for the families, for the witnesses, for the community. They force people to relive the worst moments of their lives. All of that is true, but retrials exist because the Constitution demands them. A fair trial isn't a privilege the state extends when it's convenient. It's a right. It belongs to the defendant, even a defendant as unsympathetic as Alec Murdaugh. It belongs to the families of those who were killed, and it belongs to the public, which depends on the system to produce reliable answers to the most serious questions a society can ask. Who killed these people, and can it be proven? Letting a double murder case go unanswered because the retrial is expensive and the defendant is already incarcerated, that sets a precedent that corrodes the foundation of what the justice system is supposed to do. It says accountability is negotiable. It says the system stops when the math gets inconvenient. That's not a message any attorney general really wants to send, and it's not a message the families of crime victims anywhere in this state should ever have to hear. Alec Murdaugh has maintained his innocence since the night he called 911 and told dispatchers he found the bodies of his wife and son. He maintained it at sentencing when Judge Clifton Newman told him a monster lived inside him. Newman said the opioids may have turned Murdaugh into someone capable of killing his own family, that the person standing before the court was not the person who committed the crime, though is the same individual. Murdaugh looked at the judge and said, "I respect this court, but I'm innocent." He said he would never, under any circumstances, hurt Maggie or Paul. He has maintained that position through every processing, every appeal, every public statement his attorneys have made on his behalf. A clean trial, a trial without a corrupt clerk whispering to jurors, without the volume of prejudicial financial testimony the Supreme Court criticized, is the mechanism the state provides to test that claim. If the evidence is strong enough to convict Murdaugh fairly, a second jury will convict him. And that conviction will be something the first one never was. It will be unimpeachable. It will be a verdict that no appeal can touch, not because of some technicality, but because the process was clean, because 12 jurors heard the evidence under fair conditions and reached their conclusion without outside interference. That's the kind of verdict the families of Maggie and Paul deserve. That's the kind of verdict the public deserved. A verdict that holds, a verdict that stands, a verdict that settles it. And if the evidence isn't enough, if a jury hearing the prosecution's case without the emotional weight of excessive financial testimony and without a clerk's thumb on the scale comes back with not guilty, the public deserves to know that too. That would be a painful outcome for a lot of people, but it would be an honest one. It'd be the system working as designed, testing the state's evidence under fair conditions and letting the chips fall. Either way, the trial produces a clean answer. Declining to retry produces nothing. It leaves the question open. It leaves the families without closure. It leaves the public without certainty. It gives nobody anything except the vague sense that the system decided this particular question wasn't worth answering properly. Eric Bland, who's been on this show, the attorney who represents some of Murdaugh's financial crime victims, said something after the ruling that really did stick with me. He said his clients have forgiven Alex, but they've not forgiven what he's done. They will go through the process again. Think about that. People who were personally harmed by Murdaugh, who lost money, who were lied to, who were exploited by a man they trusted, are willing to endure a second trial. Not because it's easy, not because they enjoy it, because they understand something fundamental about how the system works. The process matters more than the convenience. The answer matters more than the cost. If Murdaugh's own financial crime victims can commit to seeing this through, the state of South Carolina can do the same. The question was never whether retrying Murdaugh is worth the money. The question is what it costs if you don't. And the answer is clear. It costs Maggie and Paul a verdict. It costs people that cared about them closure of a conviction that can actually stand. It costs the public's trust that the system finishes what it starts and doesn't say, "We give up. We had somebody that screwed up and cheated, so game over." It tells every person in South Carolina that when the process breaks, even when it breaks because of someone else's corruption, even someone on your own team, even when the defendant is already locked up, the state's response is to shrug it off and move on. It should not be that. That's not justice. That's surrender. That's a system saying it did the math and decided accountability wasn't worth the invoice. Maggie and Paul Murdaugh were killed on their family's property. A jury convicted Alex Murdaugh of the killings. That verdict was thrown out because an elected official decided her personal ambitions mattered more than the integrity of the process she swore to protect. The state now has an obligation, legal, moral, constitutional, to go back into a courtroom and answer the question the right way. Not because it's easy, not because it's cheap, not because it changes where Alec Murdaugh sleeps at night, because two people were killed, because their deaths demand an answer, because that answer has to come from a process that works the way it's supposed to work, and because a verdict that holds a verdict that no one can challenge, that no clerk can taint, that stands on its own merit, is the only thing that constitutes justice for Maggie and Paul. That's not a question, that's the answer. And it's not just the answer for this case, it's the answer for every case where the process breaks, every case where a conviction gets tossed on appeal, every case where families are told they have to go through this again because somebody somewhere failed to do their job. The system doesn't get to quit when it gets hard. The system doesn't get to treat a financial sentence as a consolation prize for a murder conviction it couldn't deliver cleanly. The system goes back in, does it right, and gives the people who need the answer the only thing that matters, a verdict that holds. For Maggie, for Paul, for every family that's ever been told the process matters, because it does. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. We will continue our conversation there. The links are in the description. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're watching or listening. There's a lot more to come. Our coverage of the retrial of Alec Murdaugh, it continues. We'll continue our conversation there. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.